Welcome to QWERTY Writing Life Podcast, where we have candid chats about our creative lives. This is Meg.
And I'm Joy.
For more information about our podcast, monthly newsletter, or author resource series, visit us at QWERTYWritingLife.com. That's QWERTY, spelled Q-W-E-R-T-Y.
It's the first six letters on your keyboard.
So, are you ready? Grab your tea.
Or your coffee. And let's chat.
Hello, everyone. It's another week.
Hello and welcome.
Today, we're going to talk about motivation to move. But before we do that, let's talk about our creative weeks. Joy, what did you do?
Oh, well, this past week, I have been doing an unexpected thing and an expected thing. So I'm editing for a client, loving his third book. It's the third book in a fantasy trilogy. So it's a lot of fun to see it all come together and help kind of put the finishing touches and the final polish on a fantastic series of books. Mm-hmm. And then I also have been prepping for the job market. So I've been working on gathering together my portfolio and resume and figuring out how to do all of this in a brave new world. It's very different from the one that I originally learned how to apply for jobs in. So it's definitely a different landscape, but I'm figuring it out and I'm excited about the possibilities and the things that I'm learning and the things that I'm putting together. And I'm also enjoying being reminded of so many incredible opportunities that I've had in my life. So kind of pulling back through some of those old articles and old newsletters and blogs and things like that that I've worked on over the years. It's kind of cool to see, you know, how I've grown, but also to see just the things that I've been able to share over the years with others. So kind of an interesting process.
That's so good though. And we encourage that at QWERTY Writing Life.
Of course.
To review the things, the places where you've been and to see how you've grown in your art and everything. So that's really cool that you're getting to do that in your professional life as well, especially since your professional life and your creative life does tend to blur the lines there. And I love it though, because that means that you get to be creative in your professional life and vice versa. So that's pretty amazing.
So tell us about your creative week.
Yeah. So my main thing as far as creatively goes this week is that I've been working on just writing at least an hour a week. And I know that sounds like such a small amount of time, but it's like an hour more than I have been doing a week. So let's talk about that for a second, right? So everything is a gain whenever you haven't been doing anything. And I've been allowing other portions of my life to kind of take over the joy that I get whenever I make things and create things. And so even just adding in an extra hour a week has added just some joy in my life. And I love it. I love it. And it's a bit of a, it kind of keeps everything in the forefront. It reminds me that I am not out of ideas and I'm not out of words. And it also allows my brain to percolate while I am doing other things that are not creating. But very, very cool thing, something very cool that happened is that I have been holding on to a particular title. And I didn't know what story needed to go along with it or what needed to go along with it. And during this season of my life, I think I have found a home for it this past week. And so I think that my next, well, actually I'm going to say it. My next poetry book, I have the title for it before I have all of the poems for it. So I think my next poetry book, no, I'm not doing that. I know my next poetry book is going to be titled The Incessant State of Maybe.
Oh, I love it. Oh, that's fantastic.
It's about indecision.
But look at you being decisive with your title.
Oh my gosh, isn't that funny?
I love love that.
The incessant state of maybe. I'm pretty like jazzed about it. It really makes me happy.
That's awesome.
So, and that's what my poetry has been about for quite some time. You know, some older things, but also a lot of newer things. It's just been about like the maybes, like this what if situation. And if I make this movement or if I make this decision, and then I end up, you know, making no decisions and so on and so forth. So
I feel that so much right now.
right. I'm thrilled for that title and to have that project on the books.
I cannot wait to see it as it unfolds. I know it's going to be amazing.
Oh my goodness. And I haven't seen this title like this anywhere. I've heard like perpetual, like the perpetual state of fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And, but that's not really like the whole, it's not really perpetual, like the incessant, like I think that kind of gets across the annoyance of it as well. Like there's this.
I'm thinking like of a mosquito. Can you have a mosquito on the cover?
Oh my gosh. Yes. You'll never go away. But yeah, that's it.
Yay.
Well, it's kind of neat that we're talking about like a potential or a budding project, something that has started a smidge, but has not quite gotten off the ground yet, because that's a little bit of what we are talking about today is this motivation to move. And as you can tell, I had some great feelings about having a title for something, for my, you know, for a next poetry project. And really and truly, like whenever you have those feelings, you just kind of want to hop on it immediately. And you can go and you can go and go and go for a while. But at some point in time, whenever you're working on a creative project, there's going to be some stalling. There's going to be some dread. There's going to be some slowing of the pace, right? And so Joy and I went to speak to a group of college students at a university for the creative writing group there. And one of the students asked a question and we answered it, but then we felt as if there was so much more to say. So the question was, what is your motivation to publish? What keeps your butt in the chair to finish a project and get it out there? Mm-hmm. So we will expand upon this in this episode. So I have a couple of published pieces out there as far as like full pieces, entire books. There are some like poems and things like that that I've gotten into some journals and stuff. But as far as like a project that was big and, you know, went from conception to the hands of the public, there have been two of those. So just to kind of give you a brief summary of how those things got from beginning to end, we'll start with Grief Like a River. So that's the first poetry book. And the reason why I got to the end of Grief Like a River is because I kept reminding myself, like, for the reason, like, the purpose of the project from the beginning, which was to encourage others in grief to feel their raw and real feelings and to not feel ashamed about them. But to do that also inside of a safe community. And then the second book that I have out was actually co-written with my friend Joy over there. And it was Finders Keepers, A Practical Approach to Find and Keep Your Writing Critique Partner. And that's a nonfiction author resource book that we wrote together. And the reason why I was so on board with this project was because Joy and I, when we were trying to be critique partners together, there was nothing like this anywhere that was all in one place. Like, we had to scrap together resources and really create our own procedures and such for that. So we found a need and I wanted to fill it. And really and truly, that was probably the main reason. But second, no, we're going to say it ties. The second number one reason was because I had an external motivation to please Joy. So this book as since it was co-authored, I had an accountability and a responsibility to Joy to do my part and to do it well. So that was really the big situation. And I know that that's a co-authored project, and so it might be a little bit different than what you're dealing with right now as you're listening. However, I will say that after stating those two reasons to Joy, she found a thread between them. So the reasons for getting those books from the heart to the hands for both of these projects, as Joy found out, are very similar. The first one was that I wanted to help others. And the second one was that I wanted to provide something that I wish I would have had before I needed it. So those are, though they're two totally different projects, you know, fiction, nonfiction, poetry, prose, that sort of thing, their specific motivation had a commonality to it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's my first point here, that your specific motivation between your projects may, you know, it might vary from project to project, but there may still be an essential piece connecting them all together.
Yeah, I love that. I do. And I love that idea of this connecting thread. And I feel like we're going to see that as we talk a little bit more about this topic again. Mm. So for me, and when I answered this question in the group, I immediately went to Any Good Thing, which was my first novel. And so I got through those revisions by something very specific. And I remember the moment, like there was a moment at some point during the very long process of revisions and edits and all of that for Any Good Thing, where I literally craved readers. And I really just wanted them to experience Jack. And so for me, it was this extreme feeling that led to a desire to get it done and into the world. And just that desire for readers. And so I think that a point or a takeaway here would be that it's okay to want readers. And even like if you think of it in terms of you want customers, like that's okay to think of it in those terms. Yeah. And then I think for me, why I continue to write and finish and publish stories, because the whole questioning was like, okay, how do you actually keep going, you know, and get to the end? And if you're going to produce more than one thing, you know, how do you keep doing this? So, and I think for me, it's a continuation of that same feeling is I love my stories. I love the characters. I love the situations that they go through. And I believe, you know, in addition to the wanting to have readers for them, you know, because I mean, what's the point of a story if you don't have readers, right? That's kind of the point. So beyond that, though, I believe that my stories can help a reader somehow. It may simply be to give them an escape, okay? Or it might be able to encourage them on a difficult day. Or it could even give them a beacon of light in a dark world. I don't know. I don't know how readers might be in the moment that they receive my book or are reading my book. I don't know how it can help, but I do think that somehow it can help. So, yeah.
Well, and there are two main, if I can say so myself, there are two kind of like extremes of what people think about like an author's life and the type of author that you could be. And just those two extremes, on one end of it, you have like the starving artist where they have very few readers and consumers and they live to follow the muse and and they, you know, have a ratty apartment and some, you know, someplace and, you know, that sort of thing. And then you also have like a six-figure artist and they have a lot of readers, and that there is a stereotype for that particular artist's career where, you know, they write for commercial reasons and they write for the money and all of that kind of stuff. And it almost gives them an air of conceit and narcissism and that sort of thing. And I think that those don't do justice to the authors that I know. And also the ones that I can see in inside of the artist's career, especially if you are especially if you're a writer, you know, if you're an author. And so there is that. But if we look at the motivations behind those, like we've got the starving artist who's motivated by the muse and their creative inhibitions, you know, and then the six-figured artist who is motivated by money and wealth and that sort of thing. And I would just like to throw out into the world here that these two mixes of motivations, actually, if you put those two things together, that's where joy and I think those two extremes like meet in that middle, where you do have to have an inherent desire to create things, and you do have to have an inherent desire to share things. And sometimes we got to live too. And if you can find a way to live off of the things that give you joy, then that's where that meets, right there in the middle, right? So and also, like, let's just say here too that if you create from need, like that art kind of muse situation, and if you share with passion, like I love this thing that I've just made or that I see here, and maybe you will too, like that kind of share from passion. And if you work from joy, so you're driven to do what you love every day because of this need and this passion, wow, that's like a beautiful thing. Like it's a beautiful thing to be able to do in this adult human world, right?
Yes, that is the dream. That is the goal, yes.
Right. So if we look at things like it's okay to want readers, and it's okay to do that. We just want to squelch that idea that you are a narcissistic, money-grubbing artist. So ultimately, too, like we desire community. We want community. And it's okay to have a healthy sense of creative pride. And it's not a narcissistic thing to want that. That's an unfounded perspective. So I just want you to think back for a moment when that time, maybe when you were a kid, and or if you have never been a kid, because some of us came out adults, then that kid that you know. there's a kid sitting at a dining room table who just drew this picture and they thought it was pretty. Like the initial immediate thing that they want to do is share that with someone else. And I think that adults kind of squelch that. Like they tap that down and hide it in a big box, that desire to want to share something special that you think is special with somebody else. And that's sad to me. It's very sad to me.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And I do think that this is something that as creatives, we kind of have to work against, right? Because I think that, you know, and May and I had a discussion before we started recording, and I'm not going to go through all of it, but think back to like junior high. You know, it's like that point where you have to stop being who you want to be, or, you know, just be yourself, because you feel like you have to fit into these molds, right? And I think that as adults, we are still struggling to come out from that feeling that we have to be like that we have to fit into these molds, that we have to be the way that everyone around us thinks that we should be. And that really seeps in to our creative work, I think. So there's a combination here as we're adults and we're seeking to do this professionally, where we have to recognize the need for constructive criticism and constructive critique alongside that enjoyment and that love and that passion for sharing a piece of ourselves, right? And there's also a little bit of magic in figuring out how to not allow constructive criticism to extinguish your joy. These two things should coexist. And we know that they can if you are sharing unfinished work with the right people.
Right.
And that's what our book is all about, honestly. I'll reference that again in a second. So as far as finished products, everything you share is finished to the point where you're willing to share it, right? So that should include an emotional readiness that can withstand or easily recover from criticism, and particularly from unkind comments. Notice that I didn't call that criticism, because it's not, it's awfulness.
So, I agree.
We're going to send you back to our book, Finders Keepers, A Practical Approach to Find and Keep Your Writing Critique Partner. And also episode 12. In episode 12, we talked a lot about balancing vulnerability and our art and things like that. So those might be some good things to go back to if you're thinking more about this topic. So as adults, we share our art for a variety of reasons. And as we were talking about this episode and we were kind of bantering back and forth, you know, what are some of the reasons that we share? We came up with a few examples and we want to share them with you. Now, we're sure that you guys have some reasons as well, so we would love to hear them. We're hoping that we're going to get some emails from you guys and hear what some of your reasons for sharing are. Mm-hmm. But May and I both have personally benefited from art in our lives, whether it's the written word or, you know, art as in paintings or music or whatever. We have benefited from these, from others, and also from our own work, because honestly, it's that act of creating really does help us as well. Sharing comes naturally to us because we innately want to help others, which goes back to some of those motivations that May shared. So when we find something that we love or that has helped us, like art, we desire to share it. So that's one of our reasons.
Yeah. And if you are trying to get from, you know, your stalled out place to the finishing line, or even just some movement toward the end, another reason that you might could use as an arsenal for motivation could be internal reasons that are just like, because you're you. So, and some of those are, some of those are from nature and some of those are from nurture. So identifying those things within yourself is going to be a really important thing. Sometimes that's really hard to know where to start. So I'm going to give you a jumping off point and share something that is one of my reasons, but it's also a little bit vulnerable as well. Kind of personal. So you can kind of maybe start thinking about those secret things inside of yourself too. So this is one of my reasons. I am not a great communicator of hard or tender topics. So, so poor communicator, it also can kind of be like a trauma response too. But art may be the only way that I can really say what I truly need or what I truly feel. I recognize that that's a little bit like, or has similarities to like passive aggression, but I am who I am. So, so sometimes there are things that that I can say in poetry or in prose that I don't seem to be able to say very concisely or articulately in conversation. So that's one reason. Another reason that I want to share, or and also is a bit of a motivation to finish. I didn't discover this reason until after I had published the second time. So there you go.
Well, I think that's something in itself, is that you might discover new reasons as you go in this journey. So that's a little interesting tidbit to toss out there.
It is. And you also don't want to forget these reasons as you discover them too. So if you have a document or a special place, a cork board or something in your writing hole or your art, you know, studio or something like that, maybe just tack these up on there that as you discover them, because there sometimes life is what it is and we forget the things that we discover. So so this reason, and one of the reasons that kind of gets me to the end of things now, is that I want to be known. Like, as a human being who is flawed and yet fearfully and wonderfully made, I have a hard time sharing myself with people. And so this is one way that I can be known to my peers around me without having to say it out loud. Also, remember that not great communicator of harder tender topics. So kind of spurs from there. And if you think about that kiddo who is holding up their picture that they've just made, and you know, they're young, And you're looking at that picture as an adult and you're thinking, horses don't look like that. And that sort of thing. I wonder, like, if I can imagine myself as a young kid who's holding up that horse picture that does not look like a horse. I wonder if that kiddo if that kiddo knows that what they've made doesn't really look like that thing in real life. And I wonder if there's some secret part of showing someone that they love their picture so enthusiastically is a celebration of what they've done. Yes, it's that, but it's also a bit of a question. Like, this doesn't look like a real horse, but even so, do you still love me? You know, are you still proud of me? Even if this is what I can come up with. I could possibly be overthinking the scenario, but here we are.
No, I think that's great. Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, I'm holding up, I hold up this poetry book, you know, here's Grief Like a River, and I'm showing it to you guys and to the people that I love and even to strangers. And I'm holding it up and I'm like, I recognize that this is not perfect, but you know, do you still love me? Are you still proud? You know, it's a very vulnerable thing to do.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, when you're looking for your ideal readers, right? You're going to probably find some readers who weren't your ideal readers. Like, your story wasn't meant for them. Right. And sometimes there can be a little pain in that journey. But yeah, I think it's a little bit like that. Like, you know, holding out the book and saying, is this for you? Will you accept me and my stories? Are we going to be bosom buddies or not?
Are you going to make a comment?
Right.
Which is not a critique.
One of those rude comments.
But yeah, I think that all falls under the motivation or the reason that we share is, you know, wanting to be known. So if we look at it from a different perspective too, like those, we're talking to people who are, you know, we're asking to accept us now, but another way that we can want to be known is in regards to the young ones in our lives that we love to overflowing and we can't discuss these tender topics with right now because they're babies, right? They're not ready for it. But one day they will be ready to know me in my situation or you in your situation. And you may or may not be around to share. But we've made this thing that's there in the world, and it's an instrument of knowing. And I am trademarking that because that is lovely.
That is. It is an instrument of knowing.
Right. So what we produce in our art is an instrument of future people or for the young ones in our lives to know us better. Mm-hmm. And that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. In fact, I even have a notebook that I've started writing essays in to share with, you know, for my kids to be able to know, like, there's this situation. I told you to do this. It seemed very simple, but here is the complexity of it. And when you're old enough, you can read this, you know? So, yeah.
Well, and that leads into the last reason that we kind of came up with as we were talking through, and that's legacy. You know, you still get to kind of be here as artists, even after you're gone, because art is lasting, whether it's a book or a painting or whatever. So these things that we leave behind us, descendants that we may never meet might actually read these words. You know, we're thinking right now about the kids that we have, right? But think about grandkids, great-grandkids, and so forth, you know? But also there's that sense of legacy with strangers. We can encourage and influence those people that we will never, you know, they're not even an inkling in our mind who may pick up our books one day and read them. And then we can become part of their legacy. Just like for May and I, like different books or music or things at different parts of our life have had a huge effect on us and have become part of us and part of our story and part of all of that. You know, our books could become that for someone one day as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. So I feel like we're probably ready for a QWERTY challenge.
Right. Yes, we are. So speaking specifically about motivation to move, are you at a standstill? Are you at a place in your particular project where you just don't feel like doing it anymore? Mm-hmm. Are you at a place where you don't know what your next move is? Yeah, that sort of thing too. Or if you're not in that place right now, have you been in that place before, or can you see yourself in that place in the future? This challenge will work for any of those situations. But currently, right now, I'd like you to do a deep dive and figure out why you want to share this book with the world. What are your reasons to share? And can that reason to share, or multiple reasons to share, it can be about the specific project, but it could also just be about sharing your art in general, because you'll notice that there were both of those that we've given you examples of. The specific project ones were at the beginning of the episode, and then just reasons to share your art in general was toward the end of the episode. But come up with both if you have both. Come up with one if you have one. But my big question here is that reason to share a big enough motivator to get you to the end of your project? Ooh, right?
That'll make you keep thinking.
And if it's not, did you dive deep enough? And if you did dive all the way to the bottom, maybe finishing that project is not the thing you need to do. I know, I said it out loud.
May's having us have a come to Jesus.
Well, there are other projects. As an artist and as a creator, there are other things that you need to focus on. If that is not a strong enough reason, there are other things that are going to get you to the end that you need to be working on, that you're called to work on, that you want and need to get out into the world. So don't work on that thing that's not worth it.
Can I get an amen? Like, I feel like I should have some organ music going. And
well, that's the way I feel right now. And I feel a little bit saucy right now. So that's how I'm saying it too.
I love it. We hope that you guys have a fantastic week.
Yes. And go make something.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope this episode encouraged you. Like all creatives, we thrive on consumer recommendations. So please consider leaving us a review and sharing our podcast with your creative friends.
If you'd like to continue this conversation, visit us on our website at QWERTYWritingLife.com or on Instagram at QWERTYWritingLife.